How you say your last name?
Narek.
Whatever. Edith and Carrie. And topic of discussion today will be sewing, songs, and traditional foods, as well as traditional materials for sewing.
Wow. Okay.
And
whatever you want to start off with.
Get your date of birth.
6/20/47.
And you're from Kaktovik?
I was born in Kaktovik and raised in Barrow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you are
full-blooded Inupiaq.
I'm going to ask you about sewing, traditional materials that you use for sewing, like furs or leathers or more modern materials. Do you like to use more traditional stuff like furs when you sew?
Right now I'm in the process of making a jacket, and it's out of velveteen, and I'm using silver fox for the fur, and I'm going to that design of 1960s maybe. It won't be so, it's just something that I was thinking of and bringing back that fashion again. And it's easier to do. And I have learned to do the trimming for a parka with flare, gathered flare parka. And and it takes like, I think a couple of weeks, 3 weeks. It depends on how intricate the trimming is on that parka. Cloth, we use traditional cloth. Long time ago, before there was even cloth, they used those flower material for flour, bags of flour. I think they were like 25 pounders. They used those cloth to make outer. Atikluks, we call them atikluks. And I was just looking at the old time way of having parkas. I want to do that someday. They didn't have any zippers, and I want to do that. And I want to make a cloth top, and they had inside, they had squirrels for inside. Even before mouton, or nowadays they use lamb skin and opossum. Opossum is the best because it's light and warmer. And I have a company that I order from. It's very reasonable because it can get really pricey. The wool from overall at home would be around $600. The Wolverine about $400. So it gets kind of pricey to make a parka. And I was just looking at the intricate artwork. My grandmother had a squirrel, fur squirrel jacket with that thick calfskin, black and white. They use black and white for trimmings, and they cut them into little pieces and sew them together. It's beautiful. And that's what I remember growing up, and And you do catch the squirrel, and you gather up, and you tan it yourself, and dry it up, and get it ready, and then gather up as much as furs as you can, and when you have enough, then you go ahead and do the cutting. I remember my mom cutting the pattern. They make it a triangle on the top and cut it on the side and straight on the bottom. And that's how they have. I think it looks better that way too. So I never asked why they patterned it like that, like a triangle on the sharp on the top like that, like a triangle, and then cut it straight on the both sides and straight on the bottom. And and I remember men going out and catching wolf for the rough and catching wolverine for the trimming. So that's how they made processing. I remember mom sewing every right before Christmas or Thanksgiving, especially before Christmas, they would all be sewing. And I remember we used to have brand new antiques, brand new muckluck, the whole family. They were so industrious. It's just like sewing, you know, for that special, special occasion. And they never used dandelion.
They used
caribou, sinew. Yes. That's another thing. They catch caribou and they know how to cut it up. I have a book. I'll show it to you if you want to look at it. I have a braiding, how you're supposed to specially cut the caribou. There's a special way you cut the caribou in order to get the sinew. And I have that book.
I was looking at a book too about sewing, because I took Alvin's class here at the university, and I actually made a pair of mukluks.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
And wow.
I was looking at the book, and it said, I remember the lady that taught us, she said that you don't want the fur pointing up, because the water will get stuck.
So yeah.
You put the fur down. We used the cow
skin. Cow skin?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I made a pair like 2 years ago.
Wow.
It took forever though. I like making them. I made another pair.
What did you use for sole?
The
bottom.
I think she gave us like, they supplied the deer skin, tanned deer skin, or the hide. And then we had beaver trimming for the top fur. It was just little baby ones.
Mm. Wow, those are really nice.
Yeah, I liked how they turned out, because since I'm Klinka, I know how to make moccasins.
Yeah, so it was similar to your
moccasins.
So, yeah.
I liked making that, and then I learned how to make baskets too. The birch bark and then the grass one.
Mm-hmm. So before, I mean, this was like ages ago. They use bearded seal. They dried up, and it's so like when they first catch it. When they first catch the bearded seal, the women cut the seal, and you have to be really careful about not cutting the skin at all. You have to be really careful, and after that, after you take the blubber off from the skin, and then I remember our mom. I remember mom after she does that. I remember her right away. She stake it, even on the ground. Just stake the skin on the ground. And it'll get hard. Either that, they have a big 2x4. They make just enough, big enough for the whole skin, and they tie it up around. They slit little pieces of holes on it and dry it on that big board, 2x4. You've probably seen.
Yeah, we do similar to that back home.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But we do that when we...
And in order to do it on the ground, we have those little wooden pokes where you could just use those. I remember I grew up in those pokes where there's wooden pokes. You do it by hand and you dry it up there. And when it's dry enough, that one is, when you dry it like that, it's for a parka, the bearded seal, or the seal skin. But for the atungaks, they call them, I remember mom doing that. They have to ferment the skin in order for the fur to come out. For the fur to come out, I think it's like a week or a couple of weeks. I remember mom doing that, letting it rot, ferment, so the skin could come out. And when it was ready, then you scrape the skin off, and that's where they make the soles. They dry up that, they poke it on the, they poke it on, they either poke it on the ground or that big board. And so after it's dried up, sometimes it would be beautiful white. You know, it depends on how well taken care of it is. And so after it's dry, they, for instance, if they're going to make a makluks for me, then they make a footprint of my feet, and then cut a slab of that ugluk skin from the ugluk that got white or whatever, and then they leave about an inch away from the footprint. And then, after that, after they cut up the bearded seal skin, uguluk, whatever, then that's where the hard work is. They start crimping it. Just imagine these women before pliers were like, nowadays they use pliers, they use their teeth. Oh man, the crimping, you know. I'll show you, excuse me. They either could be, seal skin is like white, the bearded is, see this crimping?
Oh yeah.
This was flat, completely flat. So just imagine them doing it with their teeth like this. Isn't that amazing how they did it by, amazing, I just cannot do it. So I remember learning how to do it with a pliers. And it's, you have to be very create, see how it is? And then that's how it comes up. It comes up like that. And then you have to do the back side, and then you crimp it again like that, and it becomes this, see? This whole thing, like that, that side. And they're very comfortable, they're light, they're warm. And this is a fancy makhluk, and they made waterproof makhluks for springtime. I remember Mom making those from the uruk skin, and they do the waterproof stitching on those, and sure enough, when they use them, they don't get wet at all. They sew them like this, you know. It's all waterproof. When I wear these, I don't get wet inside, even if I... And these waterproof makhluks were not this fur. It's just skinless, bearded seal, like this. They,
Tell us about that.
A bag?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And that's... And the fancy ones, a long time ago, I was just talking to one of the students earlier, even before calfskin came, we had that. What kind of skin was that? Seal skin? Bearded seal skin? And it was thin. I remember it was kind of little bit thin. It must have been like a tanned seal skin. Because bearded seal is thicker. Bearded seal skin is thicker than a seal skin. And it was all no calfskin, nothing. And for trimming, they made thin slices of. I remember Mom doing that with a seal skin. She would dye it red, and then use those little. Pieces, long, they cut it so that they could weave it, you know, the seal skin. After they dye it, after they dye it red, then they cut so that it'll be just enough to weave, to make different designs on the makhluk. And we hardly see that kind of pair. But I do remember Mom making that intricate trimming. And I remember she had this contraption where she makes holes so that she could do that. I said, oh, wow! That is so neat. That was so neat too. Watch her do that.
So you see more like modern tools or stuff being used, whereas the more traditional stuff's kind of not being done as much? Like,
my sister still does her thing with repeat. I remember crimping. Yeah. I think she's still... I've seen her do it with her teeth. Uh-huh. Opposed to this. she preferred her teeth. I remember her doing that. So, and before sewing machines, it was all hand sewn. But in my age, in my generation, we have the sewing machine, we have ability to make bias, which I had made last year for my sister-in-law, where I have the ability now to make bias tape like this. Out of the same kind of material and put it on the part. It's beautiful, you know. So that's what we are doing in this generation. This the sewing machine and teaching these young ladies, like they're in their 30s right now, they have the most intricate designs, and I am so ever so grateful that somebody had the patience to teach them how to do the trimmings, and that's why I'm here. I will give you an opportunity some day, some weekend before I leave, to show you how the idea. We're not going to all sew. It's just showing you how we do it and the different nowadays. I just went to Joanne's fabric. Wow, it's a candy store for all ladies who sew. It's awesome, it's wonderful, all these. And I was being focused on black thread and single fold bias black tape, and here I was just like, oh my gosh, it was beautiful. And that was the biggest Joanne's fabric that I've ever seen in the States. Yeah. I've been down there in Lower 48, and this is the biggest. I was so impressed. So that's what we use, Joanne's fabric, and also try and find reasonable priced Wolverine wolves. We order them, opposed to maybe some of them they have trading partners. If somebody would be so lucky to get a trading partner, like from Anaktuvuk Pass, they still hunt wolverines, wolves. So they still do that. They still hunt wolverines and wolves. So they still have that ability to tan them themselves, dry it up themselves, and it takes a lot. I remember our dad softening, tanning, you know, that it removes the inner part of a skin, and scraper. I remember him scraping, you know, scraping. A wolf or a wolverine.
So did you guys, it sounds like you guys used almost every part of the animal. Like when you hunted, nothing was wasted. You can make your sinew out of the caribou.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The soles and the furs were used.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We ate the bearded seal and ate the seal skin and the caribou. But one of the things, we never ate wolverine or wolf. It was given to the animals out there. I think that's what happened. They leave the meat out there. Need to save your You just take this down. So it's a cycle, you know, you give it to the animal. They can eat it. But yes, we do use, even for the boat, the skin boat. To this day, we still consider it a delicacy, the fermented. We call it urak. When the bearded seal skin is being fermented for a whaling skin boat, for a whaling boat, there are these flippers that they keep in the process of fermenting, and they're really good. That's what we call delicacy. It was considered medicinal. Urak, when somebody has a cold or something like that, I remember my brother Raymond Yaakov would take some out and eat some so that he would feel better. So, urak is also made from walrus.
I think I read something about that.
Yeah. And whenever they catch a walrus, we would like pack this slab of the skin of the walrus and ferment it. Oh God, it's really good. It's very good. One time we had one, and sometimes it turns green, and it's very good. Only Eskimos, only full-blooded Eskimos. I joke. Well, those are some of the things that we consider our delicacies. Like the caviar, what is it? Duh. You know what caviar is?
We do that back.
Oh, home. You do?
Oh. With the salmon.
Mm.
I don't eat them though.
Yeah.
No.
So down there in lower 48, they're having fermented fish eggs. They call it caviar.
Yeah.
And it costs big time, a lot. Yeah. That's so going back to sowing, I think we pretty much covered. What else do you want to know?
Just about different foods, like subsistence foods, like
caribou
and salmon, or
no?
Mm-hmm.
Up there in Barrow, around the north slope, we eat from the ocean. Like I said, the seal, the bearded seal, polar bear, walrus, fish, yeah, grayling, whitefish. So, and ducks during the spring, eider ducks, we eat those too. Really good, and they're fresh. And so in the summertime, we go out and hunt for caribou. That's really good. And also, where I was born, we subsisted on sheep and squirrel. I remember eating squirrel, and it tasted like veal. Very soft, really good delicacy. And so it's about the same, except in Kaktovik they had the sheep and they ate squirrels. So, and they go out whaling like we do, whaling near, along the coast, Point Hope, Barrow, Kaktovik, Nooksack. They have to go further down though to go whaling, but they do.
When does whaling take place? Like, what part of the season?
We just got done with fall whaling. Around September. Yeah, September. And then during spring, there's April and May. Spring whaling.
What kind of whales do you guys harvest?
Bowhead. And beluga is more for like Point Lay, but we do catch some beluga. Not that much, but Point Lay is the one that harvests beluga. No dolphins. No. No flipper. Sorry. Rattle. what am I missing from the subsistence?
You guys harvest berries? You guys get berries?
In Atkasuk they do. Salmon berries?
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Those green things, I guess, get kind of water out of the ocean. Those green things?
What green things?
They grow along the ocean and they used to pick them. They put them in seawater.
We could, like, in the tundra also, we have these greens where we could pick. You have to know what kind they are. You have to ask the elders, whoever, before you pick anything, you know, to make sure that it's the right thing. They're really good in Sila, the greens. And also, when I was growing up, we would go out there and kongleks. We call them kongleks.
Yeah.
Like a clover? No?
They kind of
look like a clover. But they're not. They're really good eating. Kongleks. And there's these red long ones. We also ate those when we were kongleks. That means when we were looking out for those kind of things. And we eat them right there.
Is there any that you would harvest that you would use as medicine?
This, yes. I have a tape. If I checked it out to one of the students, you can
use it after that?
Yes. I'll give it to you. I mean, I'm checking it out to each student who is interested in seeing the tape. And one of the medicinal, that's what we're going to discuss tomorrow. But like beluga oil is really good for colds, if somebody's coming down with a pneumonia or something, they add a little teeny part, not too much, just a little bit of kerosene oil. And they keep it, you know, and when somebody gets sick, they put it on their chest and make it better, make it good. And that, I remember Paluka. So there are
oil.
Seal oil. Those are considered the anything that is caught from the ocean is all unsaturated. It's all very healthy from the ocean. And the Bethel area had they had a book written about what kind of vitamins the animals, the seal and all these, I said, wow. They had a book out like that, I remember. So look into the Kuskokwim, why you can't, Kuskokwim, I'm pretty sure they could be on the internet and look up the vitamins, what kind of vitamins are in the seal, and they had a really good book. So I'm pretty sure we can find it here from Brooks Building. There's this guy that works over there from Bethel. I don't know his name. Huh? Quaglin? Oh no, he's not there, but there was somebody else. I think he got sick. Anyway, what else? You got 5 more minutes. Just being honest. What did you want to know? There was a list of the things that you wanted to know about.
It was just songs that have stories. You told us the polar bear one, that was a story, but are there any songs that you guys sing that tell a story or have a story behind them?
The last Eskimo motion dance made by the famous composer, Cleburne Tunick, you could tell that they composed these songs from their souls, from their hearts, and it comes to them. Right? And it was just a powerful, very powerful. And he passed away after he made that motion dance. It just you could see that dance, and towards the end, it's like praying. So there are stories from people who compose songs, definitely stories. They do tell stories when they compose songs, and the songs are handed down from generation to generation, and they are learned, like you learn how to motion dance, and it's wonderful that, you know, we preserve our songs by giving them away, letting somebody learn them. And there's family motion dances. If you know, like for instance, a grandson of this motion dancer, Ikuwana, you know who's going to be dancing that when they start singing. You know, sometimes it's like that. And you know, and so the grandson learned it, so it's handed down from generation to generation.
So can anybody write a song, or does it depend on who you are? If you want to write a song, you have to get permission?
No, it comes to you. It will come to you. There was this story about this one person, one guy, I can't even remember his name. He just was just laying down on his bed and decomposed it in just 2 minutes, less than 2 minutes. So Russell can compose a song, I can compose a song. It's a matter of just like there was one, there's always some story to it, you know. Anybody can compose a song. But it's the spiritual essence of our culture is that if it comes to somebody then in just like that, I say, wow, there's got to be a somebody helping them compose, you know, composing that song. That is essence of our spiritual connection with the land and respecting animals and others and the realization that we are not alone, there's somebody more powerful giving us the knowledge and the wisdom, you know, to do that. So that's the spiritual essence of our culture. I think they were very intelligent. So, yes, anybody can be given that opportunity.
I think the next time I want to talk a little more about sewing. If you have patterns that you can share, or other art or stuff you have.
You wanna do it here? It's a hands-on, visual. I wonder if we could tape it if we want to. I could talk to you and show you how it's done. Yes, I can do that. And there are some patterns that I have. I'll share them with you. You could make copies of the patterns if you want.
Your patterns you have, were they like family patterns or just...
Mm-hmm. I remember receiving one from my sister, you know, and it was like, wow. When I first started, when somebody first started, I take apart an old atiflu, we call it atiflu, but snowshoe, and use it to a pattern. We take it apart. But I have patterns. They're handed down from mother to daughter sometimes, or sister to sister, friends to friends. So I remember getting a pattern from my cousin Janie. It was a child pattern, so it's all family and friends, and I have some patterns that I can share with you. So next time we'll be here, we'll meet here?
Yeah, I can.
Same time?
Yeah, next, this coming Monday again.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have some. I'll show it to you. I'll show you. I'll help you understand that. You know how a parka is made. Okay. Good.
And the topic today will be fish.
Yes. Fish. And I love fish.
you just mentioned that you were born at a fishing camp. Do you remember the name of that fishing camp?
Kuvraktovik. Okay, let me write it to you for you. Okay. No, I don't think so. This is my copy. Let me get a paper, okay?
It was about five miles away from it's
walking distance. And I was there this summer, and I remember going to Kaktovik after 18 years of being gone and going home and reminiscing and crying at the same time, saying, "Oh my God, the old townsite." They're at the new townsite. So that time, I had Uncle Daniel take me over to where I was born by boat. He took me over there by boat. But you could go there by walking. And it's called Kuvrak. K-U-V-R-A-K. T-U-G with a dot, corrupto, Greek, V-I-K. Kuvraktovik, which means a place where they fish. And Kuvrak is like a net. The first K-U-V-R-A-Q is Kuvrak is net. So they did a lot of fish netting over there. And we were rod and reel fishing this summer around that area. They do rod and reel. So that's Kuvraktovki. That means where they go fishing. Yeah, Kuvraktov. That's the name of the town.
And that's 5 miles from
the town, the residential area where everybody lives there, and they call it Kapto. 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 It's K-A-K-T-O-V-I-K. That's the original way that they had. That's the official name. But I was trying to spell it. Nowadays, we spell it Q-A-Q-K-A-K-T-O-V-I-K. T-U-G with a dot, V-I-K. K-A-K-T-O-V-I-K.
What kind of fish do you guys harvest?
Oh, the best ever fish that we eat, frozen, is called hakta. It's really good. Cisco. That's what they call that fish, Cisco. And I have it right here. The names of the fish that we had caught over there. Iqalusa. That's least Cisco, a white fish species. Similar to Arctic Cisco. It's Arctic Cisco is kaktak. That's the one I was talking about, Arctic Cisco. This Iqalusak is it's similar to kaktak, Arctic Cisco. So that's the one that we mainly fished. Is Arctic Cisco, and there's around up in the Canning River, there's a broad whitefish, Anachlik, July through September, but it's occasionally taken in the winter at fishing holes. There's they call them first fishing hole, second fishing hole. They're around, that's what they call those fishing areas where they catch fish. So, the ones I personally have experienced fishing is the kaktak. Excuse me. You want to drop? You want to stop? See it? I remember when I was growing up, I saw them attach the kaktak, Arctic Cisco, and Mom would put them outside where the sun won't be shining on the fish, they say, for us to keep it away from the sun, and they ferment it, and we call it auro, A-U-R. So let's see. Au. A-U-R-O. R-U-R-O. Q. R-U-Q. R-O. That's fermented. And I grew up eating that, and it's all to this day. I just love R-O. It's fermented fish, and they ferment it for about a week or so. It depends on if it's nice and hot, then it ferments right away. So, and I remember when Mom and them catch a lot of fish, they would put them all together in a rope, tie them by the water so that they won't get dried up. It's sort of like a refrigeration so that it won't get, so that it'll be fresh. They tie them up together with, through their mouth, I remember. And that's what I did this summer when I was teaching the young people, the youth camp. Go ahead.
Fermented fish, is that a delicacy for mm-hmm. people?
Mm-hmm. They still do it. I think nowadays, I think we can do it inside the house. It doesn't have to be out, you know. We hardly camp out anymore, but those that camp out, they ferment. Not just kaktak. I remember in Barrow, they also ferment hanaklik. It was really good.
What's that?
Hanaklik. That's broad whitefish. A-A-N-A-A-K-L-I-Q. It seems like it's bigger in Barrow than, and it's smaller in Kakavi. The dollop that's caught in Barrow, it's really good. The liver, when it's freshly caught, you boil the fish right away, cut it up, and then boil it. Take the insides out first, of course. And you boil it, and the liver is really good because that's what we like about the dikdala. Lingcod, burbot, silukbawak, grayling is also caught over there.
Do you guys make dry fish and smoked fish?
Mm-hmm. We taught the young kids. They were like, gosh, 9 years old, 11 years old, 7 years old. Kids learning how to, we did that this summer, teaching them how to dry fish. You have to slit off where the fish always waste, you mean, where they get rid of waste. We take that off first, of course.
We slide it out, and then it's similar to most of the area in Alaska where I think you are. How we do it is that we take that bone, we take the bone out, and we prepare it like we slice on the fish and dry it.
With the skin still on it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I tried some before.
Oh, you have? Where? Yeah.
My old roommate was from Imana.
Oh, really?
And I tried that style, and I tried some from Barrow, too.
So what, well, in our area, that's how we do it. Outside. We dry it outside. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen, I've never seen fish being dried inside the house, no, just outside.
It's a lot richer, I noticed, compared to the way we make them down southeast, the fish. I think it's probably just because it's different. We usually use mostly salt water when we do fish.
We do it naturally. We don't soak it or anything. We just, after we cut it up like that and get it prepared for drying, we just hang it up, and that's all we do.
So it's a lot
really
better because it's fresher instead of soaking it and stuff?
Yeah, and the fat seems like the fat is... oh man, I'm getting hungry just talking about it. Oh, yeah, dried fish.
Do you guys get hooligans up here too?
Hooligans?
Yeah.
Personally, I haven't. No.
They're like needlefish, almost.
Mm-mm.
No.
I haven't. The ones that are the ones that we catch in Kahtorik are least Sisko, which is Kalusak. Broad white fish, which is Anaklik, round white fish, Savigunak, Ling Cod or Burbot, that's Dikdalek and Grayling, Sulukpawa, pink salmon. In 1978, were taken in large numbers. I've never heard salmon at all till around that area in the 80s. 90s especially. I said, oh my gosh, people are starting to catch salmon. We've never heard about catching salmon at all. But up there in the mountains around Kaktovik, they were around there, 78. Nataranak and Kanayok, that's the Arctic flounder. And that's the one I was thinking about when we had a big ship that we used to play around, because it was an abandoned ship that the Navy just left there. So we ended up playing there, and I remember catching Kanayogaraks. We call them Kanayogaraks. So four-horned sculpin. That's the English name. And Iqaluak Puk, lake trout, and pike. So Arctic cod or tom cod,
Iguanic. They're also caught in, that's the main fish that's caught right now this year, this time of the year at Wainwright. So Iguanic, it's really good. It's a little small fish, smelt.
Do you guys do anything with the eggs?
Yes. That's the best part of it. Yeah, the fish. Yes. Just swallow it. Right away we eat it.
Eat it raw? Fresh.
Yeah, raw. Yeah.
So I know back home we love fish eggs too. People make it like ferment it too for stink eggs and boil them.
We boil them too while there's the eggs in there, and we they're kind of sticky, chewy, but we like the original raw fish eggs.
Yeah, we like to make ours with seaweed, the fish eggs, with seaweed. You just boil the fish eggs and then you dish up and put as much seaweed in there as you want.
And you eat it like that after you boil it?
Yeah. You just put
wow.
a handful of seaweed in, and it's really, really good.
Oh, man.
I think that's the best part of the fish, too. I love the eggs. Because the elders, they like to have it fermented for the stink eggs. But
the eggs?
Yeah.
Our delicacy was the whole fish, having it fermented. It's still good today. I love fermented fish. So that's how we boil it, we ferment it, and we dry it, and we freeze it. We eat frozen fish, especially calf duck. It's really good, and like anaf. I'm allergic to that grayling suluk powder. I was pregnant and I was eating that. I said, that's the last time, because I got super, super sick. Eating grayling suluk powder. So those were the fish that I know being caught and eaten. And also, dikdalik. I haven't caught any, but I know people give you some. And oh God, they're really good, especially the liver. Mm-hmm. We boil it. I think it's also even frozen, dikdalik. I'm not sure. I might be mistaken. The only personally, the only things that I have eaten frozen are kapta, anaklek. Of course, grating, you could also freeze it. And ikhwanek, that smells really good. Really good eating. Frozen. And they could, they also bake them.
Yeah.
The smell. And you could also bake anaklek. You could also bake kaktak. We bake them.
Yeah. Do you guys jar fish too, or can it?
No.
No.
But lately, I think they start boiling it and then adding mayonnaise and whatnot, and just using it for. Or like
fish spread.
There's different ways of preparing it. This time of the year, anaklek is part for people in September, October, and November. October and November, especially. People, they want anaklek because it's fresh and frozen, and it's really good eating. So we'll be getting some shares
during Thanksgiving and during Christmas, they serve that too. Whole fish, anaplex. Anaplex and sulukbawa. Kaktak is relevant. It's a lot. That's where we like to get our fish from Kaktak, which is because of that. Kaktak, it's really good eating. Frozen, especially when it's eaten frozen.
What's the fish that is mixed with berries, I think?
We don't do that.
No.
It's around Bethel area. I've never experienced or heard of anybody except around Bethel area that does the berries with the berries. Unless they get the idea and then they start doing, you know, we share ideas, recipes. Yeah.
Is there any traditional ways to prepare fish that you remember, like that isn't really done today? Like just a family recipe that only you would know about for how you prepare fish? Like if you're going to boil it or bake it or fry it or freeze it?
The one I do remember and has been going on for centuries is the fermented fish, and it's still going on today. That was a delicacy. We still love auroch. Auroch. And it's up here. It's not written down. You know that. Recipes. I mean, that's how we grew up, with boiled fish and fermented fish and dried fish in the summertime. And not too long ago, 28-30 years, I don't know, we did, long time ago, we did nothing but net fishing. And so, not in my time when I was growing up, maybe nowadays they're using rod and reel. But the traditional way was netting, net fishing, and also the ice fishing, you know, that was traditional ice fishing.
Did everybody go fishing, or was it mostly the men that would go fishing?
Family. The boys would be helping, you know, and the girls would be taught how to dry the fish, cut it up, prepare it, boil it, whatever. Yes, the men would be out there setting the net and getting the net up. And but mom and them grew up helping. There was no gender, you know. If you're there, you help. Whether you're a boy or a girl, then, you know, they love to do that. They love helping. Setting the net or getting it out.
For the ice fishing, is there a specific place that people like to go for ice fishing? Like, do they have their favorite spots where they would go fishing?
The favorite spots? In Atkasuk, yeah, people would know. And when, around November, that's a time when people would go up when the rivers get frozen or whatever. That would be a good time to go up and go fishing. But lately it's been like too warm to even go out. The weather is changing. But a long time ago, yes, they would like take a duck team and go up there and go fishing, and they know where the fishing is good, you know. Yeah. And right now, at home, they go out to the Pirinac. We call it Pirinac, that's where the people can, they're free to, my brother has a cabin there, they're free to build a cabin or a house or anywhere they want. And they go fishing there, and they also do the duck hunting during the summer. But that's where they go ice fishing.
So waterfowl too is a big part of the diet too, like the ducks and stuff?
Eider ducks. Yeah.
Because I remember that video, that was it Arctic Harvest, when they saw the geese flying by?
Uh-huh.
The women were all happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
How would you guys prepare the eider ducks? Would you guys freeze those too, or you just dry them, or
no,
just cook them there?
They're really good right then and there. When they're fresh, just warm, you take out the fur, skin it, whatever, and then, but of course there's a certain thing inside, they call it katsumak. That's what is it in English? It gets really stinky. You have to take it off, otherwise the soup is no good. You know, there's that little bile, I think, where they store their bile, whatever. Yeah, sumak, whatever that is, I don't know. Anyway, when they teach you how to cut up the duck, that you have to take it off, and you know exactly how it looks like. It's greenish. A little thing like that. And so you cut it up, you learn how to cut the you cut the legs off and the wings off, and you open it up, and there's eggs in there too, the heart is intact, and you eat the heart, and you eat the, you know, everything. You boil it and you make soup, duck soup out of it. But some people also prefer just boiling it and then having it with sila, the meat. But we eat the head, we eat the brains and the eyes and everything. Everything of the duck, except that part. And we also eat the intestines. They're really good food. So we eat them boiled, and that's the only way that I know of in my time. I mean, when I was growing up, we always had duck soup, or mom would just boil it and then we would have it with siloa.
Is that the only kind that you guys harvest, is the eider ducks?
I was just thinking about the akalirak. That's around April. The ptarmigan. We grew up eating that also. But I remember we never ate the head. It was cut off, I think. I'm not sure, I'm trying to think. But that's the one that they take the skin off and everything and boil it. Tons of it. And eat it with Ceylon. But the eider ducks and everything, we make soup out of it. It's really good. It's very good. And there's this duck that has that orange, yellow-like nose. I can't remember, but Kangala? That we also eat. It's really good. I can't say the English name, but Kangala? That we also hunt. I did that tonight.
You mentioned seal oil. Do you guys harvest seals for food as well? Like, do you guys smoke the seal meat or
boil it? No. When it's first cut, we cook it, we boil it. We boil it. Oh man, it's really good. Right after they catch it. Very, very good. But lately, not too long ago, we started making soup. Seal soup. I said, oh my gosh, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, something like that, all we did was boil it, and sometimes they would bake it, put lots of onions in there and just bake it. It's really good.
Do you guys eat the intestines as well, like seal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. Yeah, Ingaloa.
We eat ours too. My dad told my niece that it was macaroni.
Macaroni.
Because she thought it was. She's like, I want macaroni. So whenever we cook it, she'll eat it because she thinks it's macaroni.
Yeah.
The seal seems like to be a big part of everyone's diet.
Everywhere,
wherever mm-hmm. they can get seal, because we love seal.
It's really good. I love seal, and we make the seal oil, and we shave the skin. If they want to make a parka, they could make parka out of it, out of the seal skin, or mukluks, or slippers. They use, you know, seal a lot. Oh, I'm sorry.
We like to use the hides for steels, like for drums too.
Oh, really? Wow.
The steel and the deer are what we use.
Do you ferment it first?
Yeah.
To take the skin off?
Yeah.
Wow. It
takes a while and it's fun to make them.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they kind of look like moose drums.
Yeah.
Just the color.
Because, let's see, this is seal skin. See, the white part of this, it's thinner than the bearded seal, black bearded seal or whatever, soles. We use seal skin is a little bit like lighter, thinner. Thinner than the uruk, bearded skin. So we use them for soles, makluk soles.
What about the drums? Do they used to use like hides for that too, or like intestines or stomach?
Whale.
Whale?
Yeah, whale stomach. And also caribou stomach, really thin. But I do remember that was, I grew up seeing the drums made out of natural, like the whale. They get it from the whale stomach or the caribou stomach. And nowadays they use the parachute. But it's coming back, the original natural drums are coming back.
I hear some people say they use the parachute ones just that way they won't break when they're traveling.
Yeah.
And they use their more natural ones made from caribou or whale in their village so that way it won't get broke. That's what some people say.
It takes a lot of care because it could get dried up and break. You have to really take good care of it. Otherwise it has a tendency to break, bust. So constantly you have to wet it all the time, every time you. That's why they see the drummers long time ago, videotapes, they'd wet the drum so that it won't bust.
Have you ever made a drum?
No, it's a man who makes the drums. I've never seen a woman make a drum, only the men. Because they're the ones who do the drum. They know. We covered a lot.
Yeah.
On fish. That's very good.
There's a lot of similarities too, because we like to ferment our fish too.
Mm. Especially the eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The heads too.
Oh really?
Yeah. Stink heads.
Stink heads.
Yeah. It's good, but when you're making it, it's just like. But then once it's done, you're just.
Yeah. I think that's it's, I shouldn't say sad, but like your age group, all they concentrate is on the smell. And that's okay, that's all right, that's just human nature, I think. Long time ago, We couldn't wait to eat. We didn't care about the smell or anything. Maybe it was just a natural thing around, you know. We got used to the smell.
That's so. What I catch myself doing when I'm going to try something new. I'm like...
Yeah, young people have that sense.
And so my grandma always gets mad. Don't smell it, just eat it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Because there's some native foods that I haven't tried for, like, in my region. Just because I'm like...
Yeah. That's okay, that's all right. We respect that. You're not supposed to force yourself to eat anything anyway. But I grew up with fermented walrus and fermented fish and so they say you're not supposed to do that to animals like that. You know, Because I don't know, we've always respected what the elders say. No, don't do that, you know.
Kind of like don't play with your food.
Otherwise, I don't think the animal will not come back, you know.
Yeah.
That.
You'll have a bad fishing season or hunting
season. If you disrespect it like that, you know. So that's the way we grew up, about respect towards animal that we are eating. So,
you said that you guys dry the fish naturally. Do you guys smoke it too, or just like air dry?
Air dry. Yeah. Some people have smokers now, you know, the ones that they buy from the stores. But we never did smoke, I don't think. It was the Indians or Bethel area. We just air dry. Outside.
Yeah. We do that too. We do both air dry, like, and then smokehouses. Like drying them fresh, and you get a halibut. Dry them on the boat as you're going into town.
Oh, really?
I just love halibut.
Best when you fry it. Oh man, halibut is really good. That's one of the fishes that I can eat. And I'm not here, but the rest I get really gassy. So.
Yeah, I love salmon.
Yeah. So that's what we, that's how we eat and prepare and hunt. Fish. That's what we do. Fish. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.